Welcome to This Sporting Life with me, Tom English. In this episode, we celebrate one of the greatest achievements in Scottish football history, in the company of Willie Miller. It's May 1983. Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher has called a general election.
Where there is doubt, may we bring faith. And where there is despair, may we bring hope.
Spandau Ballet are number one in the charts. Return of the Jedi is released in cinemas.
I am a Jedi, like my father before me.
But by far and away, the most memorable event of the year is Aberdeen winning the European Cup Winners' Cup 40 years ago.
And Aberdeen has done it here tonight in Wales.
40 years ago.
Yeah, it was it was quite a moment and something really special, obviously, in my career and the history of Aberdeen Football Club, and probably the history of Scottish football as well. When you start talking about things happening 40 years ago, you wonder just where the time has gone. But I can still look back and I can still remember.
Good, because I'm going to be asking you a question just as well.
Up to a point I could remember. I can only tell you that I really enjoyed my time at Aberdeen, my career at Aberdeen, which spanned 20 years as a player. Take a walk down memory lane and see where it all comes out.
I just want to dwell on Gothenburg briefly, and then we're going to go back and then we'll go forward. Going up to get the cup, you look super cool with the one-handed lift of the trophy. Were you kind of as calm and collected as you looked, or was the all heart rate going?
To be honest, Tom, seriously, and I know now when you look back and you realise how huge that moment was, at the time, in a funny way, it was just another trophy. Just another trophy. It's only after the fact that you realise what you've actually done here, and the fact that all of a sudden you were getting photographs and letters from all over Europe. That never happened prior to us winning the Cup Winners' Cup. You were then recognised as a proper team. You were recognised as maybe half decent players. Perhaps you weren't recognised before, and that goes not just domestically or European level, but international level too. Because when you play for Aberdeen, it's a provincial club. It's not one of the big clubs in Europe, and it aspires to be a big club in Scotland. But European trophies don't usually come to clubs like Aberdeen. So, getting back to your question, I was quite calm. Although, if I could rewind maybe 10 minutes before that and the dying moments of the cup final when I gave away a free kick just outside the box, and you're thinking, is this the error of my career, and is it going to end up in the back of the net? So that was nervous moments, fortunately for me, and I must say it was never a foul. The referee bad refereeing call. The wall was set up, the free kick was taken, and it was by the far post, and I think Jim had it covered anyway. That was about as nervous as I felt in the game, because we did feel confident that we're going to lift the trophy, actually. When I look back, when I'm at cup finals now in Scotland, I see all the fanfare that goes with the cup finals now, the pyrotechnics and the stage. This was a table that was brought out, and the trophy was put on the wooden table, and then the UEFA official came, who thought it was his moment instead of my moment, because he wouldn't let go of the trophy. So I had to just physically grab it out of his hand.
Did you have to give him the look?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, the stare.
This is our moment, not your moment. At that time, the one-handed trophy lift just became norm. It wasn't always norm with me. It just kind of happened over a period
You're
of time.
You showing off there, were you? Here's another thing. It's no big deal.
No, not at all. It was more one of comfort. I just felt that that's the way you should lift a trophy. I wanted to make sure I got the hair and the moustache in, of course, into the photograph. A magic moment for us.
We're going to come back to all of that, but I want to go right back to the beginning. Born in Glasgow, reared in Bridgeton.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Oldest of five children.
Mm-hmm.
Your dad a toolmaker.
Mm-hmm.
Mum a cleaner.
Yeah.
Where do you think your kind of ability to kind of lead players came from? Was it from your parents?
Yeah, I think my mother's a very strong person. Women in the 50s and 60s in the East End of Glasgow were pretty strong characters. They had to be to survive. So you had to be tough in the East End of Glasgow to grow up. You had to stand up for yourself. Where did you play football? We played football in the streets. you know, if you were lucky, you could jump over the wrought iron fence into the school until the Johnny came and chased you out. And then I played most of my football in the Glasgow Green. The Glasgow Green was red blaze. I enjoyed my time growing up, very good family. You know, we managed to come through all the trials and tribulations of living in the East End of Glasgow during these days, and we've all done well for ourselves.
So you got out, got to Aberdeen. Did Aberdeen seem a long way away at the time?
Well, it was a long way away.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about
five hours.
It's not the roads that you see now. The thing about Aberdeen was that Bobby Caldwell and Jim Carswell, who were the two scouts, who made your family and you feel that you were going to a safe place. So you're leaving your family behind. You were 16-year-old. I was signed by Aberdeen when I was 14 in an S form. So for that 2 years in my mind, I'm going to Aberdeen when I'm 16. They made it feel as though you're going to be looked after. And to be fair, you were looked after. You were looked after very well at Aberdeen. It's a great club. I was desperate to go and try to, you know, make a life as a footballer. It was never in any doubt that I was going to go there when I was 16.
Your third manager was Ali McLeod. And Ali McLeod made you captain.
He did,
What were you, 21?
21, yeah.
So he said it was a wedding present to you.
Yeah, but it was typical Ali, really.
Right.
What I wanted him to say was, you know, you've been doing great. You've been a leader in the dressing room. Your performances have been, you know, at a high level. Here's a captaincy. But he didn't say that. He says, no, I'm going to make you captain. It's a wedding present. Well, OK, I'll take it. I lifted my first trophy, the League Cup. We played extremely well against Rangers in the semi-final. Not so good against Celtic in the final, but we managed to get over the line and lift the trophy.
Graham with a chance, and it's in. Dave Robb has gone. 2 minutes of extra time gone. There is the final whistle. Ali McLeod has won his first major prize in Scottish football, and Aberdeen have won the League Cup for the second occasion ever. And there is the Aberdeen captain, Willie Miller. And for the second time, an Aberdeen captain raises the Scottish League Cup.
I want to talk about the road to Gothenburg. And when I say the road to Gothenburg, I don't just mean that season. I mean your European story. Mm-hmm. Your first European campaign was 73-74. UEFA Cup, you beat Finn Harps. And then you came up against a brilliant Spurs side and they gave you a bit of a doing.
Yeah.
It was 1-1 at Pittodrie, it was 4-1 down in London. And that was Gil Zean and Martin Shivers and Martin Peters and Pat Jennings and Steve Perryman, and you were a child.
What age am I then? 17?
Yeah.
Maybe 18. 17,
teenager.
18, right? I'm just a teenager. You're just in. It's a team that's kind of being brought together with youngsters getting the opportunity. To actually compete and be there was a great learning experience, but they were far better than us at that time. The result didn't flatter them, but as I say, you go away from that, you know, knowing the kind of a level that you've got to reach if you want to be a top player, if you want to be a top club, that's the level that you have got to get yourself up to, and you've got to embrace that challenge as well. It gives you a taste for it. It gives you a taste for wanting more of that level of football, more of an opportunity to get yourself tested at that level against some of the best players in the world, basically.
Yeah,
you would have to say at that time.
In 77-78, again, the UEFA Cup, you went out to Molenbeek. And it's not so much the going out to Molenbeek that I'm interested in here. It's a couple of Gothenburg players that beginning to drift into the scene now. Stuart Kennedy and John McMaster were around at that time.
Yeah, Johnny came to the club, I think, maybe a year after I came to the club. Johnny's actually older than me. But whenever I tell my teammates that I wasn't the oldest player on the park, when we beat Real Madrid, they look at me and they go, that's not right, you were. But Johnny's, I think he's a month older than me, John McMaster is. He had just the most magical left foot, John. Not the fastest of players, but fast up top. And if you're reaching that level, you're not particularly quick. You've got to be quick of thought. And you've got to have some talent. And definitely his left foot was hugely talented. You know, played a huge part in the 80s for us and a huge part, obviously, in important games. And
could you apply the words quiet and unassuming to Stuart Kennedy?
No, that's the opposite. That's the opposite. Stuart was brilliant because he was the most positive player that you're ever going to meet. As far as Stuart's concerned, nobody was ever quicker than Stuart. Stewart was never at fault for any goal in his career. But I think that's a great attitude to have. And he was a fabulous player for us, Stewart. And he would also say, who's the best player on their team? Who's the best forward in their team? I'll take care of him. You just leave him to me.
Billy McNeil. When Billy McNeil was appointed Aberdeen manager, you were up on a roof.
That's correct, yeah. It was a paying gig.
So you were the captain of Aberdeen at that time, and you were still...
Yeah, but you don't know what I was paid as captain, and I can tell you it was very poorly paid. You know, in the 70s, the wages you were getting was just... You know, you look at what players are getting just now, and you can't compare them. I mean, it's just so different. But back then, it was an ordinary wage you were getting, and you didn't have any bonuses during the summer as well, so how do you kind of make up your financial drop during
the
summer?
So that was your summer?
Yeah, I had a friend, and he was a joiner, and he had his own crew, and he was doing a conversion, a loft conversion, and I was up helping him. Then somebody walked past, "You got your manager?" And I'm up at the top. The Aberdeen fan told me it was Billy McNeil.
Can you remember where you were when you heard that Alex Ferguson was your new manager?
I can't remember. I can tell you the build-up to it, because we didn't think it was going to be Alex Ferguson. The favourite at that time was Bertie Auld, but it wasn't. And we didn't know too much about him. But we soon found out about him, that's for sure. So he made a few waves, I must say, to start with. A bit of a rough diamond. Rubbed a few of the players up the wrong way.
You being one of them?
Well, me being one of them up to a point, yeah. But the more I think about it, Tom, the more I think that he was testing me.
Constantly referred back to, you need to be more like Jackie Copeland.
Yes,
One of his former players.
Former players at St Mam. He was a captain at St Mam. He comes to Aberdeen and we're doing set pieces. And I used to kind of take the set pieces and have a big influence on how we set them up. Free kicks, corner kicks against, etc. But the new manager comes and decides that he's going to do it the Jackie Copeland way. And it's not just that. I don't mind if it's the manager's way. Well, I would probably have minded, because I would still like to have an input into how we set it up. And eventually I did. But he kept saying, no, this is how Jackie... And I'm looking at him, well, this goes on for about 2 or 3 weeks. And I'm beginning to overflow with rage. And he says it again in one of the training sessions. I say, boss, I don't care. I don't care how Jackie Copeland sets it up. You need to let me take the responsibility here and allow me to set up the set pieces the way I want to set up the set pieces. And he says, okay. That was it.
Do you think he was waiting for you to say that?
I think he was, yeah. Really? And from then on in, it was pretty plain sailing. We had one or two clashes, but nothing like some of the other players.
Well, we'll come to that. Alec McLeish and Gordon Strachan entered the fray. One of the great centre-half combinations has been born. What was McLeish like?
He was young, he was raw, he was willing to learn. Just perfect for me. The type of centre-back I want to play with is not someone that wants to play one side and I play the other side. I want a big, tall centre-half that goes and he's the first contact with anything that's coming at us through the middle. And that's perfect for me, because I can then manoeuvre round about. It wasn't an out-and-out sweeper, because we played a flat line as well, so we would push up a part and then I would drop off. So it was a kind of a halfway house. That's how I felt more comfortable playing that position. When Big Alec came in, he was just brilliant for me. Just, here's a young boy.
Raw,
just take him.
Enthusiastic.
Alec, do this. Alec, do that. You go there. The ball goes in. It's not my fault. Alec, that's your fault. So you could put a lot of pressure on the young man to see how he would stand up to it. And, you know, he stood up magnificently.
He was immense.
Well, and, you know, in a very short period of time, we built up this relationship that went on for, was it 17 years? I think it's something like that.
It's astonishing like partnership.
Not just at Aberdeen, but at international level as well. And putting both of us together made us what we were. It wasn't the case that I was an outstanding player that could play with anyone at international level, and I think it was the same with Alex. You know, I think that combination and that understanding allowed us to get as many caps as we eventually did. And then, of course, Alec going from that young player that you're kind of manoeuvring about the park to eventually being, you know, a player that could easily manoeuvre me about the park as well. You know, once he got that experience behind him.
Gordon Strachan.
I'd like to have the last word. Gordon hasn't changed over the years. But it wasn't all plain sailing, because it was Billy McNeil that brought Gordon to the club. from Dundee, I think it was, and Gordon came, and it didn't really work out for him under Billy. But you know, when Alec Ferguson came, then he found his niche. He always had something to say, Gordon, in the dressing room. But that's a good thing. You need that in a dressing room. I was more the quiet one that just took everything in. But the most important thing with any players is not what they do in the dressing room. That kind of builds up the team spirit, I think, and the togetherness. And we're very fortunate to have strong characters, and Gordon was a strong character. And, you know, he used to take some poundings from Sir Alec. I mean, back in the day, you wouldn't get away with it now. You wouldn't get away with it. Well, back then, it was accepted. It was accepted that your manager came in and had a rant at you. And in fact, if it didn't happen, then you were surprised. But, you know, Sir Alex took it to the extreme at times. I think a lot of it was done for effect, you know, to make sure that we're all focused on what was required here. He comes to the club, and the first thing he says to us is that we're going to take on the Old Firm. Listen, for me, that's brilliant. That's my mindset. I learnt that from Bobby Clark and the team that they had in the late 60s, who could do that, very close to winning the league title as well. I think it was a point in it. So that was brought forward through Bobby. You get this new manager, young manager, I think he was only 36 at the time. He comes to the club, he's raw, but he's determined. He's got a drive, he's got a determination to overcome the Old Firm. And, you know, one of the first things that he says is that you've got to win in Glasgow. You've got to win in Glasgow. It's not a case of going down to Glasgow and just being as good as them. You've got to be better than them. And you've got to be better than them for all sorts of reasons. You've got to be a better team. You've got to be stronger. You've got to be mentally stronger and physically stronger. And you've got to go down there with belief. But the other thing is that everybody's against you down in Glasgow.
They think nothing of you.
Yeah, coming for the sticks.
Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, you know, you shouldn't be down here.
Not Celtic or Rangers class. No. Did you believe that there was a bias that the media down here in Glasgow thought little of you?
I don't know if he believed it, but it was his mantra. He went on about it that much that we did believe it. Yeah, we did believe it. Because you're kind of punching your way through as a player to be accepted, primarily international level, but club level as well. And they don't accept you down here at that time. They didn't accept you. They didn't believe that the Old Firm could be overcome. Well, remember, the league title was Kilmarnock, perhaps, that you're talking about, the last time a club outside the Old Firm won the league title. So you're talking about all these years where it's been Old Firm domination, Old Firm domination. So they believe that we are not good enough to go down there and overcome Rangers and Celtic at Celtic Park and Ibrox and at Hampden. Because you don't lift trophies if you don't win in Glasgow. You know, you don't lift the Scottish Cup, you don't lift the League Cup. And to build that up, to get you into the trenches, to get you all together, that everybody's against you then. Referees are against you, of course, because they're all Rangers supporters, they're all Celtic supporters. You'll get nothing down there, so don't expect anything. And that's why you've got to be better. You just can't be the same as good as Rangers and Celtic. You've got to be better than them. And to just constantly, on a daily basis, have that driven into you. I loved that. You know, it was right up my street. I can work for this manager. I can give him absolutely everything I've got. I can support him right up to the hilt because he wants to do the same thing that I want to do. We actually beat Rangers in the semi and the League Cup in 76. Always get that mixed up, 75, 76 then. And we got close with Billy McNeil, you know, in the Billy McNeil season as well, to doing something special. So it was always there. The ambition was always there. It was Alec Ferguson that actually brought it all together.
And then you win the league, and you're in the European Cup. So you win the league. Momentous, momentous occasion.
He clinched it in the best of all possible places, the capital, Edinburgh, the home of Hibernian, and on Saturday night, the scene of an out-of-season Edinburgh festival.
But Aberdeen have done exactly everything right from this, beautifully inside. Watson, oh, the bar! Scanlon, yes! And that's it! They have won! Alec Ferguson is on now in the penalty area. There he's in, just about the penalty area. Aberdeen have definitely won the championship.
You would have basked in the glory if you were allowed to bask. Were you allowed to bask in the glory?
Not really.
Fergie didn't allow?
No. It was a defining moment, I would say. I come into the team in 73, so, you know, you're working from 73 to, you know, getting into the 80s before you can actually, you know, say that you've arrived. You know, you make that statement. I think it sends out a message to Scottish football, sends out a message to the Old Firm, but it gives us belief. Yeah. You know, that's the most important thing. It's what we've actually managed to achieve here. And then once that sinks in, then you believe anything's possible then. Mm. You know, you then go on that period from 80 to 80, 86 perhaps. And it wasn't too bad after 86 to the 90s. But the whole scene kind of changed during that period of time. Graeme Souness coming in and Rangers turning things around. But in my mind anyway, Aberdeen were capable of doing something really special because that was a big barrier that was taking the league title.
You go into the European Cup and you take care of Austria Vienna in your first in the first
good
round.
Good team, by the way. Very good team.
Yeah, second round, Liverpool.
Yeah.
You lose 1-0 at Pittodrie. You lose 4-0 at Anfield.
Yeah.
And Fergie doesn't exactly take the defeat well.
No, he doesn't. I mean, I think, you know, when you've done something special and then you're then looking to measure yourself against probably at that time the best team in Europe, Liverpool, with Dalglish and Souness and Hansen. It was utterly deflating to go down and play Liverpool away from home and really being on the end of a doing. I can only say that it was a learning process. It hurt so much that you were determined not to let it happen again. At the same time, you've got to kind of look at that team at that time, that Liverpool team at that time, and say, listen, they were just far better than us. But that didn't stop us from progressing again and taking that lesson on board. But it really hurt, and it hurt, you know, the manager as well.
So on the way back, Fergie didn't want any chat, and he said that if he caught anyone laughing, that they'd be fined.
Alec Ferguson took defeat personally, took it hard. You know, his job, I suppose, was to make sure that we took it in the same manner, that it wasn't taken lightly that Aberdeen were turned over and embarrassingly turned over.
Mm.
So that wasn't acceptable. So I'm fine with all of that. I'm fine with all that nonsense. I think, you know, players have got to realise what's expected, the standards that you set, and if these standards drop, then the manager has got to take control of the situation. Nowadays, I don't think it could happen, but back in the days, the fine was used constantly for whatever misdemeanour, and it could be very simple misdemeanours.
Well, John Hewitt was fined 20 quid because he was driving to training and overtook Fergie, who he said was doing 20 miles an hour. Overtook him, and he had three Aberdeen players with him in the car.
Yeah.
And Fergie spots him overtaking, and when they get to the destination, Fergie's livid. He says, "What are you doing? Overtaking me at that speed? You could have caused an accident. You got millions of pounds worth of talent in that car with you. You're fined with 20 quid.
Yeah.
And McGee pipes up, apparently, "Aye, gaffer, I mean, I'm worth at least 2 million. He was one of the guys in the car. So thanks, McGee.
Well, that's team spirit for you, isn't it? You know, McGee getting a laugh out of John Hewitt, getting fined 20 quid for overtaking the manager.
Did you ever get fined by him?
No.
Never?
No.
McGee.
Strong personality, Mark. Came to the club the first 6 weeks. I'm thinking, what is this we've got? You know, in training, I couldn't control the ball. He'd play it up to him, bounce off his shin, it would go under his foot. He'd be like, phew. And then he became one of the most important players in my squad, in my team, in the starting 11. With his strength, his belief, goal scoring ability. He could lead the line with whoever you put up with him. When we won the league, we had to go down to Celtic Park and play the two games in quick succession. I mean, he was a man. Yeah. He was a focal
point. Beat him twice in
10 days or two weeks.
Certainly inside
like
2 weeks.
He turned out to be a real, I think he's our top European scorer, I think, until this day. He turned into, one of the most important signings that Aberdeen's ever made.
The following season, Ipswich, you beat Ipswich in the UEFA Cup. Massive, massive victory. Brilliant team, Butcher and Mariner and Mills and Murin, Tyson, Alan Brazil. Second down in England the previous season. They'd won the UEFA Cup previous season. But Fergie played on the whole English arrogance thing, I think, didn't he? And wasn't there some story that Archie Knox, who was obviously the assistant at Pittodrie, listened to Bobby Robson's team talk through an air vent.
Okay.
And he was talking dismissively of you guys.
That's what you'd expect. I think they were maybe top of the league at that time as well during the season. They had won the UEFA Cup.
They were top of the English league at the time.
Listen, they come up here thinking that this is going to be easy. I'm not complaining about it. I don't mind that people don't give you respect. It's up to you then to make sure that when they go away, then they have a think about it and go back and say, well, we maybe should have given them a little bit of respect. But on the night, I mean, for me, that night was Peter Weir's night. That was when Peter, getting the two goals.
Destroyed Mick Mills.
Absolutely. To be taken apart so extensively by Peter was just a joy to watch, and it was a fabulous result.
Well, this is Weir now. And another goal! Well, that really does finish it off for Ipswich. That surely makes it safe. The goalkeeper, Jim Leighton, prancing around his penalty area, and two goal Peter Weir has surely made it safe for Aberdeen now. And 3-1 to Aberdeen surely makes it safe.
Alan Brazil spoke about Doug Rugsy, and Doug liked a tackle, right? Liked a bit of physicality. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Alan Brazil said that Rugsy looked like a guy who had escaped from Barlinnie.
He was a fearsome-looking character, if you know Dougie, his bark is definitely worse than his bite. But when you see him in the tunnel, when you see him with the teeth out, when you watch him play the game, when you watch some of the challenges that he would go into, he was a fearsome character. He played a big part in whenever we went down to Celtic Park. And if you remember, the Celtic Park used to have the jungle, which was opposite the dressing rooms. And you wouldn't go near the jungle.
I mean, it's a scary place.
Scary place. But Rugsy always did his warm-up in front of the jungle. You're like, Dougie, why are you doing that? It's just the way I want to do it. And he'd have the teeth out and he would do the star jumps in front. And he would face them. He would face them and take them on. So he's making a statement there and then that he's at Celtic Park, not just to take part, but to go back.
He's
not frightened of you either, and I'm not going to be intimidated. That fearsome look, and it was always noisy in the tunnel, and you could see the opposition looking at him and wondering what have we got here. But again, played a huge part in the success that we had.
That was a big one. You go on and you play Arges Pitesti. They're not, the history of football is not literate with mentions of this team. You won 3-0 first leg. You were 2-0 down in the second leg.
Half time.
And was this one of the great Fergie runs at halftime?
It was right up there. Yeah, it was right up there. You think the tie's over. You won 3-0 at home. And then you go down 2-0. And wee Gordon tells a story about the manager and Gordon getting the verbal throughout the whole of the first half. And actually, going from the right wing to the left wing just to get out his way and stay away from him. And Gordon knows that it's coming his way at half time, so he's the last into the dressing room as well. He's trying to make the 15 minutes be much, much shorter, maybe 10 minutes of brutality that's coming his way.
He's in no hurry.
He's in no hurry to get in and get it. And we go in at half time, and there's this huge big table in the middle of the dressing room, and the door gets flung open, and there's this huge urn. This thing, it's a tea urn, but it looks like a trophy, and it's sitting in the middle at the table, and it's full of tea, and the cups are all out as well. And the manager comes in and he sweeps his cups, and they hit the wall. And it's a wall everywhere, and there's just shrapnel going, cup glass going everywhere, and hitting the players. We're all ducking, getting out of the way. And then he sees this tea urn, and he thinks, I'm going to take it out in this tea urn. And he whacks this tea urn, thinking that it's going to go over, and it doesn't move. It's solid, and he hits it, and you can see him going. But he doesn't want to show that it's hurt him. He's like, he can't talk for 30 seconds and he's really suffering. And you're looking around. And the thing is, you don't want to look at Cooper. You don't want to look at McGee, because McGee will be giving it, the eyes. So you just get your head down, because you don't want to be seen laughing at half time. So it settles down a wee bit and he has his his normal rant, and we go out and we manage to turn it around and get a 2-2 draw.
Not only did you have to be terrific footballers at times, you had to be brilliant actors.
What you would normally do, and what most of the players did, was they just looked at their boots. Listen, this happened when you won games as well.
Well, it was the famous cup final.
Yeah.
He lost the plot entirely. But we'll deal with that. You next played Hamburg that season, 81-82. Sensational performance, really, in the first leg. This is the Hamburg of Beckenbauer and McGaff and Kals and Hrubesch and amongst others. Great players. And Beckenbauer was also working as a scout. And he'd come over to Aberdeen to watch you play Hibs. And he praised Neil Cooper, who was a kid at the time. Neil Cooper said, Beckenbauer said I was possibly the closest player to himself that he'd seen at that age. But I always say that it just goes to show even Franz Beckenbauer can talk some of the time.
That sounds so, like Neil, doesn't it?
So Neil Cooper, an amazing talent.
I remember that quote, and I remember the local papers going with it. You know, Beckenbauer and Cooper's the best thing and the best sweep. And I'm reading this and I'm saying, no, he's not. And if he's any thoughts that he could move back and take over my position, then there's no chance of that happening. But Neil was just a fabulous player for us at that time, so important. Come in with all the young boys, Eric Black, John Hewitt, Neil Simpson, Neil Cooper. These were the four that had the impact. He was just such a nice person, and his personality didn't change throughout the years. Sadly, no longer with us.
Yeah.
You know, you need that. You need someone in your dressing room, I think, anyway, just to lighten it, and he would take it to the extreme.
Because if you lived a life of just relentless intensity, you'd never have achieved anything.
No, you've got to go out thinking about the next game. Okay, you reflect on the game that maybe didn't go your way or your performance wasn't as good as what you expect, but you've got to think forward. That healing process started with Neil.
I love this, because wasn't there an issue with Fergie and some of the younger players and their hairstyles? Somebody came in one day, it might have been Neil Cooper, came in and he had the perm.
Oh, yeah.
And Fergie says, take that off. Thought it was a wig.
Yeah,
yeah. So he got some other player, he didn't like his hairstyle, Fergie didn't like his hair, so he got him to train in a balaclava.
That's right, yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. It was Neil and Brian Gunn. So they go on holiday, and they've got this, what was called sunning at the time, and it turns it blonde, and they come back, and all of a sudden they're blonde. And that's when Fergie says, what's that you've got in your head? Take that off, take that wig off. It's no wig. I'll get it cut. Get it dyed back to its normal colour.
The famous season. We're now at the famous season. You play Dynamo Tirana of Albania. Albania is under a communist dictatorship. Mm-hmm. Nobody's allowed into the country, so you haven't a clue what you're going up against.
Yeah.
I think, in fact, at the Batadri game, in the programme, I think the Dynamo Tirana team was blank. Nobody knew who they were, anything about them. So you wouldn't even have known their names, of these guys, would you?
No. Yeah. We didn't know anything about them. It was actually quite a tight two-legged affair. It's 1-0 at home, and we take that over. We go over, and you've got to remember, there's not any mobile phones. Seemingly the newspaper headlines was that the Dons fly into this military coup. Back home, they're all kind of worried about you, but in effect, it wasn't too much. I think it was just a small uprising that was taken care of swiftly. And we go and we play the game as well, and it's all, the fans are all in uniform. The night before, the band out in the street playing right through the night as well, I would think, just to try and disrupt our sleep.
Yeah.
And then we play the game in a tight affair, and we actually, you know, managed to get through to the next round. But you just played the game. Get in and get out, I think, is the mantra there, yeah.
I omitted to mention Sion in the preliminary round. You battered them.
But I scored.
Oh, did you? Oh, sorry, that's the reason I deliberately left it out. I'm going to give you any glory. You beat Sion, you beat Dynamo Tirana, you beat Lech Poznan. All fairly routine.
Mm-hmm.
Quarter-final against Bayern Munich. Now it gets serious. The quality of the teams in the Cup Winners' Cup was off the scale.
Yeah.
You had some of the biggest, wealthiest clubs at the time in the world in there. And Bayern Munich, they played in the European Cup final the previous year. Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, who you were marking, twice European Player of the Year at that point. But Franz Beckenbauer said previously that Bayern would win easily.
Well, that's okay. That's just great to read, great to hear, because it then, you know, gives you a cause. We've got to prove them wrong. The Bundesliga was the best league in Europe at that time. Yeah. So we had fallen to three in different competitions, three German sides. We knew that, or we felt that if we could overcome Bayern Munich, then we could lift the trophy. And that's how important that game was. That was the kind of a final before the final.
The game out there was, which was 0-0, right? Yeah. Exceptional performance.
Yeah. Had chances. Yeah.
Had chances.
Could have been better.
It's 3-2 at Pataudry. And it's one of the great games. It's absolutely nuts.
Yeah.
Augenthaler makes the scores 1-0. Simpson 1-1. Flügler 2-1. And then the space of 48 seconds, McLeish 2-2. And Hewitt 3-2.
Mm-hmm. There's Eric Black. The goalkeeper knocks it out. It's in the net and Aberdeen are in front. Sean Hewitt. Pataudry goes berserk.
I can't imagine what Pataudry was like. Can you still hear that?
Yeah, you can.
You can. Does that live with you forever?
It does, yeah. I mean, the way the game went, we know that it's going to be tough. We know that they've got players that can turn that round. They scored two great goals. We're behind twice as well. You know, it's brilliance of goals that they score as well. It's not simple goals. It's not defensive error goals. It's just class quality. And to have the belief that you can actually turn that round, come back, you know, from going a goal down, come back again, and then turn it round in such a short period of time. And I think it's that short period of time and turning it round where the whole place goes, you know, absolutely crazy. But then there's still a job to be done. You've still got to get it over the line. It's a time for calm heads. So you celebrate that. And I did celebrate it, but very, very quickly I get back into that mode. And it was important that we all get back into the mode of just seeing out that last 15 minutes, whatever it was.
When you're up against Rummenigge, what did Fergie have to say anything to you about Mark and Rummenigge, or did you know what you needed to do?
I think I knew what I had to do. You know, the issue with Rummenigge is maybe when he went off, did I go with him or did I stay? And most of the time I went with him unless I thought we were going to be exposed, and just tried to stop it at source, anything that he was involved in terms of the build-up. But then it's making sure that you take care of him inside the penalty box. You know, that's where the danger lies, you know, where strikers come alive is inside the penalty box. And you've just got to, you know, believe in your own ability to be able to cope with that. The concentration level is the most important aspect when you're playing at that level, I feel. It's about, you've got to think throughout the game. You've got to be at the top level mentally. Yeah, physically, you know, when you're taking part in the game, absolutely. But when you've got an opponent at that level, it's about thinking your way through the game and making sure that you never get yourself exposed. You never get yourself the wrong side. You don't make any bad decisions. And whenever it comes into the box, that's where you're in high alert. Unfortunately, for me, it worked out. Unfortunately for the team, it worked out. And it was the greatest night ever at Pataudry. Listen, if you're not in it for a challenge, then you shouldn't be there. And the bigger the challenge, the more I enjoyed it.
He knocked your tooth out.
He did, yeah. Yeah, he did. He was famed for his overhead kicks.
Yes.
Yeah. He went into one of these overhead kicks. I think it was from a corner. And I put my head in and I headed the ball away and his boot caught my tooth. And it popped out. I think that was in the first half. It was okay. It wasn't too painful. And actually, at full time, he's helped me to try and find my tooth. Very gentlemanly of him. He comes over and he says, "Very sorry. We'll have a look for your tooth." I don't know. There's no way I've got to find the tooth. So,
did you actually physically try and find it?
We actually went into the...
You're down on your hands and knees.
It was at the front. Yeah, it was at the front post where they tried his overhead kick. And he's having a look. "I can't find it. Let's go."
Rummenigge said afterwards that he was impressed by the one who lost his teeth and shouted a lot. I'm guessing that's you.
I think that's me, yeah. I did shout a lot. I was bawling all the time. It was so important to us to get through that game.
It's not indiscriminate roaring.
Yeah, it's controlled. It's controlled. It's about, you know, making sure this is what we're doing. Get your mind focused here, guys. Come on, we've scored, we're in the lead, but don't let... it's a time where the opposition are more than likely, particularly at that level, to take it up the park and
well, that's what happened. That's what you did to Bayern Munich.
That's what we did to them. Yeah, and they switched off, and they did switch off at that free kick, and they still don't.
It was a tricky free kick. It was a trick which worked. Do you think that those two performances, and this is a big question, right? But those two performances against Bayern Munich, and I'm including the final, and we're going to get to it very, very soon, that they were the best performances of your Aberdeen life?
Yeah, I would say
including the final.
Including the final, yeah. Including the final, because Spanish football was a good standard, but it wasn't the Bundesliga standard. And the manner of how we managed to turn it around at Pretoria, I think it makes it even more exciting, you know, doing the quick fire double. As far as Aberdeen's concerned, winning the league down at Easter Road was brilliant, magnificent, but the importance of these two games was right up there. I don't think there's anything that could take their place. And it set it up for the Cup win and everything that's came after that.
The semi-final was a bit of an anticlimax because it was so one-sided.
Yeah.
Watershy beat him 5-1. You lost the second leg, but it didn't matter a damn.
The disappointing aspect of these ties was the Stuart Kennedy injury, you know, over there. Which was a huge blow to Stuart, you know, played such an important part. And, you know,
that was his career done.
That was it finished. Yeah, that was it finished. You know, didn't play in the final. So cruel, I would say, for someone that gave so much to the club.
The final, Alfredo Di Stefano, obviously, was Real Madrid manager. He came to Aberdeen to watch you beat Celtic 1-0. He called Mark McGee a born fighter, unpolished, the classic British tank. Love that quote.
Yeah.
Famous about St. Clair, the ship goes to Gothenburg, 500 fans, 26-hour trip, 14,000 cans of lager consumed, which I think is the ultimate achievement. I know you did well in the final, but that for me is the achievement of the week. First thoughts on arriving at the stadium. It was it lashing all day?
Yeah, it's pouring, yeah.
All day long?
Yeah. You're actually uncertain whether it was going to go ahead or not.
Right.
You know, it was that wet. But fortunately, it eased off. It eased off just before the game. But the pitch was still sodden. You know, there was pools of water, you know, lying in the pitch. But it was good enough to start the game, and good enough, obviously, as we went along. The rain didn't come back on. But it was pouring, you know, I think the day before, and certainly all the day of the game. But, you know, we've got to focus on the task in hand, and the task in hand is to take on Real Madrid and beat them. Mm. And we did that. We did that with a fair bit of style, I thought. I thought we were the better team throughout.
Aberdeen then with the first corner of the match out on their right. The far side, we've gone 6 minutes. Strachan takes it, hit firmly. McLeish arriving to head it. It's deflected, and it's put over. The whistle is gone. No, oh, he's given it. He's given it. Yes, he's given it. Eric Black puts Aberdeen in front with 6 minutes gone. Strachan took the corner on the right. McLeish came charging up with a header. That caused the confusion, and the Spaniards appealed for offside as Black, 3 yards from goal, knocked it home.
You know, their goal, pass back, bitter blow.
Get stuck in the wet.
Get stuck in the wet with big Alex pass back. We did speak about it before the game, but Alex says, I thought if I clipped it, you know, I thought if I clipped it over the water, it would be okay and it would get there. And I says, but big man, you know, Jim's never going to make it for his goal line to the 18-yard line and, you know, quick enough to get onto that. I know. But we can say that after.
it's
not that important.
Gallego for Real, middle of his own half, moving forward, left to right, chips it into space. Juanito runs over it. Miller and McLeish. Oh, McLeish has caused danger here. And down goes Santillana, and that is a penalty. It reached Santillana, and Leighton brought him down. Quarter of an hour of the match almost gone, and it's Juanito against Jim Leighton. The boos and the tears from the Aberdeen fans. Juanito then facing Jim Leighton down to our right. Up he comes, strikes it, right footed it there, 1-1.
A measure of Alec McLeish and the quality and the mental strength that he's got is
because he could have folded after that.
He could have folded,
and he was immense.
Yeah, and he was outstanding throughout the game. So I think that's testament to the strength of character of Big Al.
When the winner went in, what view of it did you have? What the emotions in your mind's eye? Can you still see it playing out?
Oh, perfect view, yeah, perfect view of it. We were brilliant in extra time, absolutely dominated proceedings. It was only going to be one winner if it was going to be a winner, and it was going to be us. It was Peter Weir picking it up and playing it to Mark McGee. And to this day, fans still come up and think that it was Peter Weir that put the cross in for John Hewitt, because I think it's so unusual to see Mark McGee clipping it with his left foot onto the head of John. You just expect that from Peter. But it was Peter to Mark, and Mark's running strength and his power and that tank light. It's an absolute perfect description of Mark, by the way, you know, and he makes that run. But the quality of the cross is...
unbelievable. You know, in those conditions.
Aye, in those conditions, you know, down that left-hand side, it's quite incredible. And he looks up and he sees it and, you know, he picks the spot perfect. And, you know, Hewitt had been getting pelters for the manager, seemingly, because he wasn't doing what he was told. Going back into midfield, and his directions from the manager when he was sent on was to make sure he was in the box to take any opportunity that was coming his way. And the goalkeeper comes out and misses it. You know, Johnny just nudge it into the back of the net. Dizzy star jump.
Aberdeen 1, Real Madrid 1, and we're in the second period of extra time. Real, though, keep possession, try to break, make a break. They don't this time. They're trying to be almost a little too meticulous on this surface. Weir picks the ball up, lays the ball wide. Aberdeen going down the left. The cross will come in, the chance for Hewitt, and Hewitt has scored for Aberdeen. And John Hewitt, who came on as a substitute and scored the winner against Bayern Munich, has done it again for Aberdeen. And that silver cup down there on that table may well now be going off to North East Scotland. The Aberdeen players are running round in circles. Jim Leighton, the goalkeeper, has done a cartwheel. And it could well be that John Hewitt has done it for Aberdeen. We've gone 7 minutes into the second third of extra time. It's Aberdeen 2, Real Madrid 1, and it was clinical, and it was masterful, and the name was John Hewitt.
We all run to him, we celebrate, but then again, it's just seeing the game out, you know, it's making sure that
nothing's won yet.
Organized. It's not won, you've got to make sure that you're not doing anything silly, and I'm preaching this to the rest of my teammates, and of course, who is it that does the silly thing towards the end? It's me. I give away a free kick, what, some 20 yards out, 22 yards out. Outside our box, and that was the nervous moment. Unfortunately, it was taken. It was by Jim's far post, and, you know, we went on to lift the trophy.
We have got now 1 minute and 8 seconds to go here before that silver trophy down there on the table. And my word, it looks better and better by the minute. Glistening in the floodlights here goes perhaps back to Aberdeen, the Granite City. A long ball played forward, and the referee says that will do. 15 seconds early, the time matters not, and Aberdeen have done it here tonight in Sweden. They started off magnificently, got just the start they wanted with that early goal in 7 minutes by Black, and nobody worked harder than Eric Black before he was taken off injured. Then we had that penalty when Santillana was brought down by Leighton, and Juanito made it 1-1. The game has fluctuated either way. Aberdeen had their chances. Real Madrid still looked, well, I suppose, a side managed by the old fox himself, Di Stefano. But now it's all Aberdeen here in Gothenburg. Players congratulating each other. Away to my right, a most magnificent scene.
You know, one of the great achievements of Scottish football history. There's some story when the homecoming, which was extraordinary, right? Mm-hmm. The streets of Aberdeen, 100,000 in the streets, 20,000 in the stadium. I love the story of John Hewitt going home. He'd recorded the match on his VCR, sits down, and the recording ends on 90 minutes. I'd love to have been in the room as he got to 90 minutes and the screen goes blank. But there's a chaos around the homecoming. You're going out into the pitch. Is there some contretemps between McGee and Ferguson? There's some row going on? Even then?
It was, Mark had maybe over-celebrated. I think Mark wanted to take the trophy out as well, be the first with the trophy out. But listen, he played such a huge part in us lifting the trophy. He was due to be allowed to celebrate, but in the manager's mind, maybe just a little bit over.
Well, the way McGee tells it, he saw the trophy was sitting on its side in the dressing room or whatever, and he went over to turn it on the right way up, and Ferguson said, "Oi! That's, Willie's bringing that trophy out." McGee said, "I'm not bringing, I'm just turning it the right way up." "Oh, get away." And then there was did it become a bit physical?
Well, it was a little bit, but it wasn't anything too serious, Tom. Let's put it that way. But I'll take Mark's point of view. A misunderstanding, perhaps, that, you know, we calmed it down. We're here to enjoy it. The fans are all out there. We've came from the airport, you know, to Union Street, and, you know, Union Street's just packed. It's incredible. You know, the bus can hardly get down the street. And then we get to Pittodrie, and the fans are all there too. So it was a time to celebrate and a time to enjoy.
Without that McGee edge, without the Ferguson edge, you probably couldn't have got where you got to.
When you put all the personalities together, that's what made us the unit that we were. Different parts of Scotland, different upbringings, different personalities, some quiet, a lot of youth in the team. You know, Neil Cooper being the joker in the pack, Mark McGee being a personality that I've always enjoyed, actually, but a testing personality at times. But that made him the player that he was. You take that and you bring the manager into it. You bring Archie Knox into it as well. And you've got that very special kind of a mixture when you put it all together.
But the cup final, was it 10 days later?
Yes.
Simpson. What's a 1-2? That's a good ball. McGee likes his position. It could be there. It is the winner. That will win the cup. Eric Black, 1-0. The youngster who scored that goal in Gothenburg. And this will be the first time in the history of Aberdeen that they have lifted two cups in a season, and they will become the first team outside of Rangers Celtic to win the cup in successive seasons. And has the whistle gone? It has. And that was all there was in the game, that one goal. And there is a cup. Willie Miller. Well, there we are, a gleam in the eye as bright as the northern lights.
You win the cup final and Fergie's not happy.
Oh. The luckiest team in the world. They were a disgrace of performance.
Were you surprised by the way that Rangers played?
Nolan McLeish won a cup for Aberdeen. Nolan McLeish played Rangers themselves. They were a disgrace of performance. But I'm okay in winning cups, doesn't matter. Their standards have been set long ago and we're not going to accept that from any Aberdeen team. There's no way can we take any glory from it.
Can you give a reason for the disappointing performance then?
Couldn't.
No, I know he subsequently apologised, right?
He did, yeah.
Did you agree with him?
No. Well, I agreed with him.
To a point.
McLeish, yeah. The Miller McLeish.
You agreed with him that you were brilliant.
Yeah, you were brilliant. But actually, Tom, we didn't know this was going on.
It was only
later on that we found out what he'd actually said, because you can imagine, we've just done the double one of the European Cup Winners' Cup. Minor event in the history of Aberdeen Football Club. We go in and we beat Rangers in the Scottish Cup. Another minor event. And the manager's not happy, but he set standards, so that's fair enough. But he went over the top. There's no doubt he went over
the top. Was there ill feeling about it? The players annoyed, were they really annoyed?
They were. Other managers would have said, "Hey, it's brilliant, isn't it? This is a Scottish Cup, European Cup Winners' Cup, put the two together. It's been a magnificent season." He's now looking for new players. It's incredible that's been said. And, you know, you go on the bus and you're not allowed to have champagne. Right, no champagne in the bus. I'm like, "Oh, come on, Gaffer, you know, what's going on here?" And the wives were supposed to come in the bus to go to the hotel. "No, they're not coming in the bus." And the boys are looking at me and I'm going, you know, what can I do? I think all I can say is, look, just let it take its time. Let it take. Once we get to the hotel, we can have a word. We enjoyed ourselves that night, we did, and the next morning, you know, the apology was made and it was accepted. But it was totally, totally correct in the Miller McLeish part.
Sure.
I say that tongue in cheek.
No, you don't. And you're correct, completely correct. I'm sure every Aberdeen fan would loudly applaud the notion that Miller and McLeish were pretty special in their day. You won the Super Cup.
Yeah.
Yes. Only Scottish teams won
two stars.
Two stars. Hamburg, brilliant team, by the way.
Yeah.
Beat them in the Super Cup. At that moment, 1983, Aberdeen were probably the best club side in the world.
Certainly in Europe.
Certainly in Europe.
No, it's bonkers, Tom. You know, you look at the teams that won the European Cup Winners' Cup, Barcelona and Juventus. We are sandwiched between these two. We take on Bayern Munich, we beat Bayern Munich. You then take on the European Cup holders in Hamburg at the end of 83. You beat them over two legs. You know, it's no fluke, you've done it over two legs. At the end of that year, we are statistically the best team in Europe. I mean, it's there, it's written down, it's in history. And to think that Aberdeen could do that is just incredible. I mean, it is. It's just something that I could never see happening. I mean, winning a trophy, a domestic trophy, was the target. Well, actually, the first target's to get into the first team, to be a footballer, to be a proper footballer. And then you take whatever comes thereafter. Domestic honours, yeah, we hope for. European honours, you'd dream about, but to win two European trophies in 83 is just something that you would have felt beforehand was out of reach, but as you get into it, as you see what's possible, take your challenges on and playing against the best teams in Europe, then all of a sudden you believe it's possible. And when you believe it's possible, then anything can happen, and the dream came true.
And there it is, Willie Miller, the Cup Winners' Cup. Well done, Aberdeen. And Willie Miller turns away almost shyly with his medal. And Jim Leighton looks at the cup and he holds it and he clenches it like a boxer and it flashes in the floodlights. Just remember the names. Jim Leighton with three tremendous saves. Doug Ruby with his heart and as big and as strong as the Granite City. Remember Alex McLeish, who never or hardly put a foot wrong. Remember the captain, Willie Miller. John McMaster, who battled through the puddles of water. Remember Gordon Strachan, tiny red hair, again a great-hearted player, and the old Scottish footballer of style, the dribbler, the man with magic. That's Gordon Strachan. And remember Neil Simpson and Neil Cooper, who held that midfield. And remember, above all, the magic of Peter Weir in that second half and in extra time. Remember the battling of Mark McGee and Eric Black until he was taken off. But I suppose all the Aberdeen players would say, yeah, we did pretty well. But let's perhaps remember one thing of all. Let's remember that tremendous goal by John Hewitt. Comes on as a substitute, and you won't ever, ever see better.